You're listening to the Airline Pilot Guy Show.
The view from our side of the cockpit door.
WAPG. It's the Airline Pilot Guy.
Airline Pilot Guy, episode 613. Hello, you're listening to a special edition of the Airline Pilot Guy Show, the view from our side of the cockpit door, with your host, Captain Jeff, broadcasting live from Dr. Steph's Lakeside Studio in South Kakalaki. Today's show is recorded on the 5th of April, 2024. In today's episode, a flight nearly hits the Tower of LaGuardia, and a pilot who allowed passengers to walk on his wing loses his license. Also, head your feedback and a special chat. So get all settled in. Tray tables and seat backs in the upright and locked positions. Electronic devices powered on. I'm Radio Roger, and Flight 613 is ready for pushback.
Thank you, Radio Roger. He is an award-winning TV and radio reporter, currently on the number one all-news station in the nation, 1010 Winds on 92.3 FM in
New York City.
Welcome to the Airline Pilot Guy Show. It's an aviation podcast covering the latest in aviation news and answering your great feedback. I'm Captain Jeff, former U.S. Air Force pilot, newly retired captain for Delta Airlines. And joining us, well, right here at the lake,
1,000.
Professional photographer, former RAF, RAAF fighter pilot, retired Airbus A330, A340 captain for Virgin Atlantic Airways, it's Captain Nick.
I seem to have leapt up in the order here of rank. You know, according to Jewish tradition, the Torah contains 613 commandments, and my commandment to you is listen to APG.
Love it. And he is correct. I skipped our most senior member, which, of course, is, well, from her lakeside studio, along with all of us in South Kakalaki. Oops, South.
Kakalaki, Kakalaki.
Doctor, skydiver, marathon runner, IPA connoisseur, and commercial multi-engine instrument rated backstabbing jumper dumper. It's Dr. Steph.
Hey, you guys, thank you so much for being here. Welcome to the Lakeside Studio. It's a pleasure to have you all here, and this is going to be a great evening. So looking forward to tonight and the whole weekend to come.
Excellent. We're having so much fun. And we're also here with, hey, from his, no, not from his home studio in the Air Capital, from right here. Like, he's just two down from me here at the table. And he is a low and slow pilot, AMP and mechanic, old airplane enthusiast, and engineer in the aerospace and defense industry. It's Nick Camacho.
Hey, Captain Jeff. I'm so glad I could join you guys.
Me too. All right. And also joining us, oh, Radio Roger. You just heard, this is not normal because, oh, I guess I need to do the troll though. All right. Well, I've already kind of introduced him. He's like an award-winning TV and radio reporter and for the 92, all that stuff that we
great
say
to
every
be
week.
Here live.
Oh, man, so awesome that you're here with us, Roger. Okay, and so we're going to hit fade all, and we're going to go like this and say, oh, place to stand, a place with snow. It is, of course, from Toronto. Well, actually, with us here. Oh, boy. I just ran out of music. A retired financier, an aviation enthusiast, spreadsheet master, and our producer, Liz Piper.
Great to be here with you all. Hi, everybody.
This is kind of an S show right now. Yeah. Sorry, but we're having fun.
It's going fine.
Yeah, we're going. We're doing fine. Okay, very good. Well, we got the intros out of the way. And,
good show.
Thanks. But she's going to be here the whole time.
She's so, not leaving.
Yeah, she's not leaving.
She's got
here.
The ruler ready to smack you on the knuckles.
And she's going to hear, actually, what do you think? Should I just keep her microphone muted for the...
Muted?
Muted.
It's a moot point.
It's a moot point. Yeah, sorry. Muted. Let me have another swig of Jade.
Is that Jade potable? Jeff?
Mm-hmm. Good. Oh, yeah, it's very potable.
Potable.
All right. What do we want to do? We want to do some aviation news, maybe?
Yeah, I think we do.
Okay, so let me hit this little button here.
Stand by for news.
All right. Set this up, someone, for me while I try to get my keynote shared.
Sure. Are we on the Southwest Almost Buzzes LGA tower?
That's all the right. one.
I will just
Radio Rocker just says. Teased it.
I know. I'm just making sure I'm in order here. Just making sure. Yeah, it's an obligation now. That's just how it goes. It's them's the rules. So the notes here say, how does this even happen in an airliner? Even as a student pilot, I'd dial up the ILS when available as a safety blanket. And that's what Sean McHale, who is one of the folks who sent this to us, said about this particular incident. Jeff responded a whole lot to this, but I think he probably just wants to show the video as soon as it's ready to go.
I do want to show it, Steph.
LaGuardia Tower, Southwest 147, ILS 4.
Southwest 147, LaGuardia Tower, only 4, clear to land.
4, clear to land, Southwest 147.
Tower JetBlue 2813 inbound for ILS 4.
JetBlue 2813, LaGuardia Tower, only 4, clear to land, traffic support zone dish 13. Currently showing same speed as traffic, 12 o'clock, 3.5 miles per hour.
Runway 4, clear to land, JetBlue 2813, roger.
In Southwest 147, we got to go around.
Southwest 147, maintain 2000, fly runway heading.
Runway heading 2000, Southwest 147.
Southwest 147, when you get a chance, just let me know the reason.
We're too fast, too high with the tailwind, Southwest 147.
Got it, thank you. Southwest 147, climb maintain 3,000.
3,000, Southwest 147.
Southwest 147, maintain 3,000, fly runway heading and contact push 134.9er.
3,000, runway heading 30, was that 34.9, 147?
Yep, 134.9er.
See ya. LaGuardia Tower, Southwest 147, ILS 4.
Southwest 147, LaGuardia Tower, runway 4, clear to land, runway 4, touchdown RVR, 6,000, rollout, 5,500.
Clear to land 4, Southwest 147.
Rollout to JetBlue 698, check out from Ailey, LaGuardia 7029 or 79.
Tower JetBlue 698, going around.
JetBlue 698, climb maintain 2,000, fly runway heading.
2,000, runway heading, JetBlue 698.
JetBlue 698, climb maintain 3,000.
Maintain 3,000, JetBlue 698.
And JetBlue 698, when you get a chance, just give the reason for the miss.
Yeah, it looks like we got some wind shear, JetBlue 698.
Roger, thank you. Contact first 134.9.
49.
Southwest 147, let me know where you break out at.
Will do.
American 1263, LaGuardia Tower, 13, line up and wait, traffic lane is 4.
American 1263, runway 13, line up and wait.
Go around, climb maintain 2,000. Climb maintain 2,000.
Climb
maintain 2,000, Southwest 147. Continue climbing, Southwest 147, and when able to say a reason why you were, like, not on the approach.
3,574, 184 RVR, 3,500, contact tower 18.7.
We're unable that, we're 4,000 is the best we can do.
784, cancel approach clearance, maintain 3,000, fly runway heading.
I cancel the approach clearance, 3,000, runway heading, break air 5784.
Southwest 147, you with me?
Yep, just trying to work things out here, Southwest 147. We're climbing at 2,000, heading 060.
Break air 5784, climb maintain 4,000, fly runway, or fly heading at 040. 4,000, 040, break air 5784.
And of course, the RVR went up to 4,000 as soon as we canceled the approach there.
Hate to see it.
Yeah, it's variable between 4 and now it's up to 45 and that's a rollout 4,000.
Brick air 5784, climb maintain 4,000, expedite the climb. We're climbing, brick air 5784.
Okay, Southwest 147, we're at 2,000 feet, heading 060. I'd like to continue climbing.
Yeah, just climb maintain 2,000 and giving contact approach 120.8.
20.8, Southwest 147. And what were the reasons for the two go-arounds?
Southwest guy was not aligned with the runway at all. He was like east of the final. He was not going to land the runway.
Center Southwest 147, 2,000 feet, heading 060.
Southwest 147, you have approached. Climb and maintain 4,000. Say your intention.
4,000, and I guess bring us around one more time, and we'll actually stand by.
Okay, standing by.
And approach Southwest 147, we'd like to go ahead and divert to Philadelphia, to Pittsburgh, our alternate.
Southwest 147, roger, you're clear to Pittsburgh for now via radar vectors. Climb 5,000.
Clear to Pittsburgh via radar vectors, climb 5,000, Southwest 147.
Southwest 147, turn left, heading 330.
Left 330, Southwest 147.
Okay, the aircraft ended up diverting to Baltimore safely. So a happy ending for everyone. Okay, so this is interesting. This episode. Let's talk about the approach to runway 4, the ILS approach to runway 4. Let's start off with the weather conditions. They threw up a METAR there. Did they say heavy rain in the METAR there? I know it kind of just flashed up on the screen, but there was some rain. They were reporting RVRs. Anytime they're reporting RVRs, that's kind of a heads up that, things are not optimum for, the weather conditions for the approach. So I think during this approach, they were reporting 3,500 to 4,500 RVR.
I'm
being a little bit distracted. We have some stuff going on in the background.
Offstage by a dog.
I know. Well, that's more interesting probably than what I'm saying. We're coming into the approach. It's not optimum conditions as far as weather is concerned. And I think, Liz, if you'll go to, I think we have, or maybe not, the approach plate, or no, you don't. Okay. Let me look and see what I have here on my, I think I can share this. Okay. Here's LaGuardia. That's the satellite viewpoint. And this is actually the track of the, of Southwest 147 coming in. Which was definitely not on the center line. I meant to kind of share the approach plate. But the ILS runway 4, there's a note on the approach plate that says that you cannot have an autopilot coupled approach inside of the final approach fix. And it depends on whether you're looking at a Jeppesen plate or one of the other more generic government plates, how they say this, but it's basically saying auto coupled or couple approach NA, not authorized. And so when you're coming in on this approach at the final approach fix, no later than that, you need to disconnect the autopilot and hand fly it. So I'm looking at the track of the Southwest flight the second time through, and they're definitely way right, of course. In fact, that's why we're talking about this, because they almost flew directly over the control tower there at the airport on the second attempt before they diverted to Philadelphia.
Baltimore.
I'm sorry, Baltimore.
They said Pittsburgh, and then I think they went to Baltimore.
Oh, okay. Well, they diverted. They decided to give up here.
Town.
Yeah. And they either – it's just my – suspicion that either they didn't see that note, and maybe they're not totally familiar with flying in to LaGuardia on this ILS to runway 4 approach, and didn't realize that there was a note that says that you have to disconnect the autopilot. And perhaps the reason why they say that is because of buildings and other obstructions in the path that kind of bend the localizer signal and doesn't track straight to the runway. Or perhaps they were hand flying it and just not doing a very good job of it. Although I would say, I think all of us would agree, if you're looking at the track that we're seeing on screen, that's considerably right of course on an ILS. And I mean, a localized.
Oh, yeah, Jeff. They would have had beyond full deflection of the ILS, I would think, at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if the needle deflects, usually at that sort of position, one dot, you're worried. Two dots, you're very worried. It reaches the end stop of deflection. You should be definitely going around. In fact, our approach, stabilized approach criteria on the aircraft would have had you going around well before that. So I think you're right. They were probably in poor visibility. They might have been concentrating too much on trying to visually acquire the end of the runway, the approach lights, and their scan between that lovely balance you should have between looking out and looking in to confirm your instruments, because you're really still instrument flying until you've got sufficient visual.
Nick, question. To your point, was this the approach where ATC asked them to report where they broke out? Didn't that happen in one of those approaches?
It might have been, yes. So to your point, they may have been. Yeah. You know. I mean, they're going to be looking at it anyway, and it's usually pretty easy, just as you hear the height call outs, to register which one came when you saw the runway lights. So, yeah, but they might have been both looking out. But really and honestly, the pilot monitoring is keeping an eye on the instruments. The pilot flying is the one that's sharing his lookout between the instruments and visually acquiring the ground. But if you both start concentrating on trying to visually acquire and you start to miss that kind of vital information the instruments are giving you, it would be relatively easy to drift off. This is reminiscent of a very sad incident at, I'm pretty sure it was Gatwick, going back quite a few generations now. It was 747 making an approach, and they did a very similar thing. They got down very low level and overflew the roof of a hotel. In fact, they very nearly touched their wheels on the roof of this hotel, is displaced off from the runway. Climbed away, they didn't hit anything, but the captain was, I'd say, hounded almost. His company disowned him. He ended up having to leave the company. And very sadly, he, with the huge pressure on him and trying to clear his name, he ended up taking his own life. That's how seriously he was put under pressure. And the reason I know parts of the story is that I was based at RAF Lucas when this captain's ashes were spread over the ocean off the end of the runway, because he was an ex-Air Force pilot and had been based there, and asked for his widow asked for his ashes to be cast into the sea there. So, but that incident really did highlight the awful pressure that comes on a crew when they make a mistake like this. And I feel for the crew. There is a good reason probably why they allowed themselves to get into this situation. And we have to remember, we have a just culture in the airline industry where negligence is punished, but a genuine mistake, we're allowed to make a genuine mistake without fear of reprisal. And I think particularly in social media, we all have to remember that this crew were working in very difficult conditions, and they just allowed something to get away from them. So I worry that they might, you know, end up in a situation where they feel persecuted because of this. I hope it doesn't happen.
Yeah. Right now, showing on the screen, on the video, the initial approach and go around track in three dimensions, and then the second one, which is the track to the right of the first track, and you can see how considerably right of course they were. Now, a lot of people say, okay, they're talked about a tailwind, even though the surface winds were pretty much down the runway at a pretty good speed. The winds at altitude were more of a tailwind. There was some weather, I believe, to the south that was causing this tailwind situation. And, you know, they mentioned on that first approach that they were high and fast. And that's the reason, you know, basically unstabilized for the initial approach. LaGuardia, if you're not familiar with it, doesn't have the longest runways in the world. I think 7,000 feet is basically the length of both of the runways there. And, you know, you have to be very stabilized to continue an approach to touchdown in the touchdown zone and get it stopped before you, in this case, runway 4, going off the end of the pier and into the water, Long Island Sound, Jamaica Bay. Actually, no, here is Long Island Sound at LaGuardia. But over here to the track to the right that we see there, you'll see, well, it's hard to see from this because it's pretty far out, but they did get really, really close to the control tower. The control tower height, I believe, is like 235 feet or something like that. And the ADS-B data showed them at 300, although I think there's like a plus or minus factor with the ADS-B of up to 100 feet. So it's possible they were 100 feet higher than that, or it's also possible as well that they were 100 feet lower than what they were showing.
233 feet.
233 feet was the tower elevation.
Yeah, and that's a deviation in reporting error, right? So in addition to that, there's some amount of where that is being reported from. So if you've got like an antenna on top of the airplane, mm-hmm. there may be, how tall is your airplane, Nick?
I don't know. It used to be about 70 feet.
Yeah. So, you know, depending on where that position is being reported on the airplane, it could be another 20 or 40 or 50 feet.
Yeah. The radio altimeters are coming from the base of the tail, basically. But the pressure altimeter is different. And I think ADS-B works off the pressure altimeter. So you've got to correct for, you know, standard pressure or whatever you've got.
Yeah. So I can understand the urgency in the voice of the tower controller during that last approach and go around, it wasn't a go around yet until she started screaming, you know, go around. I think they were probably in the process of it
I'm
at
sure
that point.
They realized at that point. Yeah.
Yeah, they were going like,
I'm sure they were probably visual at that point.
Right. Yeah, you know what? You're probably right. They probably, because of the visibility situation at the time, was almost a mile.
Yeah.
Or three quarters of a mile. They probably saw, you know, lights from the 737 coming right at them. And I would imagine that was quite a shocking thing to see.
There was a lot of urgency in that controller's voice.
Right. So let's just say, you know, let's don't put candy coating on it. This was close to a major accident, major loss of life, including, I'm trying to get to the big screen here so that we don't have to just look at Nick. I'm sorry. I'm trying to give them as much value as possible for watching the show, Nick.
They're not paying for this.
Oh, that's true. I'm like a one-man band here trying to do video mixing and audio mixing and everything else. It's like, I can't do it. Anyway, it was quite a... Here's Radio Roger over here. Look.
Yeah, I was going to say something, by the way. As a New Yorker, there was no general awareness that this happened until, I guess, a day or so ago, and I guess the FAA announced the investigation, because this happened on the 23rd. I'm not aware that anyone publicly knew that.
Yeah, I think only aviation geeks that watch VAS Aviation videos.
On aviation social media sites and things.
All of us aviation.
Pretty soon after it happened.
Yeah, knew about it pretty quickly. But now the general public is being made aware, which is, And the FAA did say, as you said, that they're investigating and seeing what's going on here. So I don't know. Anything else to add for analysis? What do you think, Liz?
I think it was very scary.
Yeah, very scary. Okay. All right. I'm sure we're going to hear more about this in the future when the NTSB or the FAA continue their investigation here. So just be careful out there, people. All right. Didn't they say that in Hill Street Blues?
Absolutely. Love this, Sergeant.
Okay. This is from SeattleTimes.com. The FAA halts. How do we say this is pronounced? Sequim, S-E-Q-U-I-M. Wing walking flights revokes owner's pilot license. This is from the Seattle Times, as I just mentioned. The Mason wing walking business in Sequim that allowed paying thrill seekers to clamber over the wings of a 1940s Stearman biplane while in flight is no more. The Federal Aviation Administration has revoked the pilot license of Mike Mason, who flew wing-walking flights for the past 12 years in Sequim in summer and in California in the winter.
Jeff, I've got to stop you. I was telling Liz just earlier in the show that she's spelt sequin wrong, because I assumed that the wing-walker would be wearing sequins. Oh.
I wonder why you're asking about sequins.
How do you spell sequin? You've spelled it wrong.
So I heard that conversation, and I'm like, what the heck?
I didn't know what it was in relation to.
I thought, well, she's got to be wearing a sequin costume or something. Yeah, anyway.
Odd.
Sequin wing walkers.
Yeah, so I agree with you, though. I think you're going to be out there walking on a wing. You should be...
appropriately adorned.
Yeah, you should be. Yeah, appropriately.
And also, if you're dancing around a pole, you should be the same, appropriately attired.
Or not.
Barely.
Good point.
You people, your minds are in the gutters.
Tim Van Ram says expected to see Liberace up there.
Well, he has a candelabra. How would you keep that alight? If you would,
that's true.
Well, this is crazy to me. So, you know, the article continues with the FAA investigating this whole operation and being unsafe and everything else. And I started looking into some of the details and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this is, I think it's pretty crazy. During these flights, each lasting about 25 minutes, costing $1,000 to $1,400 for the thrill ride, the wing walker climbs out of the cockpit, tethered to a cable at about 3,500 feet up. He or she strapped into a harness on a fixed rig, standing atop the wings as the bright red biplane performed aerobatics, including flipping upside down so that the person's head pointed straight down at the ground. Okay, so this is a person who doesn't have a lot of experience doing this sort of thing on top of a biplane wing, and the pilot is... The airplane is upside down.
So I'm not so concerned about this part as I am about the next part.
Okay, well, why don't you tell us about this next part?
Because for this first part, strapped into the harness. Yeah. Yes, there's things happening upside down, whatever.
Right.
Strapped into harness. I don't know what all that entails, but the next part goes on and says, then disconnecting from the rig, but still tethered to the cable, but not in, I assume not in like the harness anymore. The wing walker climbed out onto the wings and lay astride a pole fixed horizontally between the upper and lower wings of the biplane, flying Harry Potter style. Not sure what that means, but
I guess like a lot pretend you're flying.
Like when they're playing that game of Quidditch.
When they're playing Quidditch, like they're holding onto it, like you're flying like on a broomstick.
Yeah. They call that
Quidditch. Yeah, but a lot less in terms of protection for sure.
Wow. That's crazy.
What kind of protection do you need when you're playing Quidditch? I just want to know.
I'm sure the standard sports protections. Oh,
okay. Fair enough. Yeah. I'm going to say the problem I have, apart from all the good points you have made, is that when she climbs out, she might have been tethered to a wire, but she then gets up in the harness. It's the first time he or she has ever done this. They've been shown on the ground. But now they're doing it in the air with the added complication of everything that happens in the experience and the whole environment is different. Who checks that the harness is correctly fixed before this chap starts doing aerobatics? There's no one else. Some poor punter who's paid £1,500 or whatever could end up with an incorrectly fitted harness without realizing. The bloke turns upside down, and then she's hanging there dangling off a piece of wire because that's all that's left connecting her to the airplane. I have to agree with the FA. I thought this was absolutely a nightmare.
Yeah, I don't know how it was allowed to go on for as long as it did, honestly. I don't know. Does anybody here have a desire to, like, go to this company and sign up for
Zero. I wouldn't mind being the pilot. You probably
They'd have to pay me $1,500 to do it.
Yeah, no kidding. Oh, man.
Well, so yeah, I had a couple of comments on this.
Yeah.
So first of all, we don't have all the information, or we don't know that we have all the information here, right?
That's true.
But one of the claims they made was that he communicated with the FAA, and the FAA basically said, you're okay. And part of the, I think that's in, I don't know how far down you read, but, you know, there's this section here that says, though the government has now ruled his operation unsafe, in an interview last August, Mason claimed that an FAA inspector had given him the all clear to conduct wing walking flights when he started flying them in 2012.
I wonder if he has that in writing.
Well, so, yeah, right. That would be a bummer if that is the case. I don't know if that's the case or not. There are... So I was going to ask Steph something, so I'll ask her that when she gets back. But
oh, she's coming. She's back.
There are some... there are some exempted portions of commercial operations, and their air tours, some air tour things, some aerial photography things, and jump operations are exempted from commercial, the commercial operating requirements. So basically what that means is that you can operate for profit jump operations as a Part 91.
It's under operation. Part 91. And there's actually, I think my microphone got turned off.
No, it's I just said, let me bump it up a little bit.
Okay. Closer.
There we go.
Pretty close.
Yeah, she is.
I really can't get
closer. I had it.
For anyone watching this video.
I put the fader down a little
bit. This is a nice muff, but it will be up my nose if I get any closer. So that all falls under Part 91. And then there's specific FARs regarding skydiving operations as well. So that is all pretty well spelled out in terms of.
So in my mind, it seems like he's in a little bit of a bind here, because he may be able to get an out on the commercial operations operating under Part 91. Correct. In that sense, but you cannot do aerobatics with more than one person in the airplane unless everyone in the airplane is wearing a parachute.
Yeah, and I don't know all those specific regulations, but I know that there are regulations detailing what can and can't be done there. And I don't know how, you know, for demonstration purposes, I'm sure there's also different regulations. So if you go to an air show and someone is doing a wing walking demonstration, that has its own set of parameters.
And often that's in wavered airspace, right?
It's wavered airspace.
So they're waiving those rules.
And you've applied for additional exemptions, right, and whatnot to do that.
Is some of this then part of the problem sometimes with jurisdiction and local FAA?
Yeah.
People saying, oh, this is okay, you're good to go, we give you our blessing, and then somebody else gets wind of it somewhere else.
Yeah.
And says no.
So yeah, and that was going to be my next comment, is okay, that they, you know, the FAA investigation determined that these flights were careless or reckless so as to endanger the life or property of another. And that wording is very specific and well known to almost all pilots, I'd say, because that is FAR Part 91.13, and it's known as just careless and reckless to most people. And that's commonly used when like something weird happens, but it's not explicitly regulated against.
Oh, that's the
FAA's catch-all. If they don't like something, they can say, well, that was careless and reckless.
The dude with the fire extinguisher strapped to his...
Yep. Yes, exactly.
That ended up under careless and reckless.
Yep.
Now, couldn't the FAA have just stopped the practice without necessarily taking the pilot certificate?
You would think. I don't know. I don't know how that process works. I don't know if that's something where if they say, you know, he's committing a violation and the result of that violation should be a revocation. I don't know if they didn't revoke his license, he would go back and say, I clearly wasn't doing that because you didn't think it was, you know, concerning enough to take my license. So I don't know all those intricacies, but
I would kind of assume that your first thing they would do is suspend your license while they did the investigation, so you couldn't carry on with a license doing more of it. So And I think as the process would go through, they'll come up with the final decision as to whether to let him have the license back or they're going to ground him for life.
Yep. And another thing I was going to mention, and this is way down at the end, is there's, I don't know if this enforcement action is a result of the back and forth between this family's operation and the airport that they're flying out of. But it also seems like there was some bad blood or bad feelings between where they were operating from and the board. And this, you know, one of the comments here is, in filings, the board expressed concerns that it might be found liable if an accident were to kill a wing walker. No insurance company will cover wing walking. And I feel like that's just a horrible but accurate description of the liability stance in aviation these days, which is that it is, man, everything that happens in aviation ends up with a lawsuit attached to it. And if we're getting to a point where airports are, and this is a private airport, I think, so it'd be a little different, but still, you know, if you have an airport that can say, we don't want you to do this thing or that thing, that'd be a bummer if they, you know, they got that power. Now, granted, this is a little bit of an extreme situation.
Yeah.
I think in all of our minds. But, you know, like if it's, you know, if it like flowed down to the point where it's a steerman giving rides to somebody and they're like, well, we don't like the liability we're entailing when you give someone a ride in an airplane that's 80 years old. That would be a sad precedent.
It could be kind of a bad precedent. Yeah.
Right.
Yep. Is it also possible? I think I read in this article that several local residents under the flight path of these rides were complaining.
One of whom was named Chrysalis Carter.
They were complaining about the noise.
The noise of the biplane flying low over the top and.
Or not the screaming of the.
Not the screaming of the wing.
So I'm sure that that might have something to do with how this somehow got escalated and was allowed to begin with. And then all of a sudden, no, we can't have this anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, honestly, having dead bodies falling out of the sky into your garden is kind of off-putting.
It happened in West London, didn't it, Nick? One of the stowaways on the plane fell into a garden.
Oh, yeah, it did happen in London, indeed, but that was...
slightly different circumstances.
They didn't volunteer to walk on the wing. They were just hiding in the undercarriage bay.
Right. Okay, that was an uplifting end.
That was an interesting one. Yeah, when I saw Liz had added this to our news segment, I'm thinking, what the heck is this? What, people really do this? People pay a lot of money to get on top of a wing to do this kind of
I get it.
I know you probably. I'm thinking this is to me this is even crazier than going up with a parachute and
getting out of
a. Yeah, I agree. 1,000% agree. I don't know that I would sign up to do that to be honest.
Yeah. Oh, well. Okay.
Time to get to know us.
Oh, let's get to know us. Yes. Thank goodness. Okay. Here we go. Where is it? Right here. There we go.
Get all about us.
Come on, Steph. Let's sing.
Get to like us. Get it tough like us.
She's not going to sing.
I'm sorry. I was thirsty.
Uh-huh. All right. It is now time to talk about what we've been doing between shows or during shows. And so as you may know or may not know, we have been talking about this for weeks, that this is a big meetup here in Charlotte. We're at Steph's beautiful home on the lake, Lakeside Cottage, as we like to say. And we're just having a grand time, you know, enjoying ourselves, drinking a little bit, not a lot. And we're going to have a wonderful steak dinner tonight, and it's just, I can't wait. Anyway, so...
what are we doing tomorrow?
What are we doing tomorrow? Well, how should we do
nothing.
This?
Nothing. We're recovering from tonight.
Oh. Yeah, that's true. That's what we're doing tomorrow.
I thought we were going to talk about the meetup. That's all.
Oh, the meetup? When is that? Is that...
tomorrow.
That's tomorrow. Oh, okay.
Well, it will be in the past by the time people see this.
Yes,
yeah.
Very much. If you're listening to the audio only, the meetup already happened and it was a spectacular success.
It was amazing.
Beautiful
day.
We
got to meet so many great people.
Wonderful. There will probably be some more audio about it.
Remember that guy that was there? That joke he told?
He was great.
Oh, that was amazing.
So funny.
Should we, maybe we should have Jeff throw it to Jeff at the meetup.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, insert.
Oh, wow. I hadn't thought about that. Yeah. This is weird because it hasn't happened yet.
Time traveling.
Thank you, Camacho. Okay. Yeah. So, well, how did it really go, Jeff? Okay. Now Jeff's telling us about how it's going or how it went.
Jeff.
Well, thanks, Jeff. That was very informative. Sounds like you all had a good time.
I hope it's more interesting than just informative. Yes. I hope it was more interesting than just informative.
It was awesome. I mean, it was one of the most fun times that I've ever experienced in my life.
So for those who are watching live, if you happen to be in the Charlotte area and you're catching this right now, very time sensitive, tomorrow, 3 p.m., 4001 Yancey, the Brewers at 4001 Yancey in Charlotte,
and
North Carolina.
What's the address? Sorry.
Again, 4001. 4001 Yancey.
Yeah. Yeah.
At what time?
3 p.m.
Until when?
Whenever.
Okay.
Whenever.
All right. Are you going to be there, Nick? I just selected your camera. Nick Anderson?
Second to you.
I don't know what to do with this camera. It's just like very distracting.
I could hide in my hotel room, but I think I'll be there. Yes.
Oh, good.
Indeed.
I'm hoping so.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there are a lot of people that want to meet you.
I don't know
why. For some reason. I don't know. But
they don't lynch me.
We should also mention that earlier, so I guess just a brief synopsis of what happened leading up to the wonderful meetup that we had that we just heard about.
Which hasn't happened yet.
Anyway, so Nick flew in to Atlanta on Wednesday, picked him up from the airport there, and we had a great time on Wednesday night. And Thursday morning, late morning, we ended up leaving Atlanta and driving to Charlotte. And on the way, we picked up Miss Liz from the airport.
You did indeed. I had flown down from Toronto.
We had Chipotle.
We did have Chipotle. Mm-hmm. And
Chipotle.
Thank you. That's it. And in Greenville on the way. So we broke up the trip a little bit. A couple hours after we left Roswell, we were in Greenville enjoying Chipotle. And then we continued on and we stopped at a Starbucks to have a coffee, kind of because it was a little bit too early to head to the airport yet because Liz's flight wasn't coming in until a little bit later. And then we picked her up, we took all of us to the hotel, got checked in and all that kind of stuff. And then
came here first.
Oh, never mind. We came here first. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember it so well.
It's important to get these things right.
Yeah.
Come on.
Is it? Really?
No. I didn't know. I just know when you guys showed up here yesterday. So
good point. Yeah.
I'm here and then Nick joined us here.
Yeah. Well, I think you should get the microphone closer to your mouth, Liz, and then you can tell us what actually happened.
Can I just say a little bit about my flight?
Yeah, please do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It was my first trip on a 350, and because the company got them just as I was leaving. So I never got a chance to convert onto them. And I had a look at the ground-based training aids, but that's all I could. I thought, oh, golly, it's going to be an impressive airplane. And it was. I mean, I was really, really quite taken aback with how lovely and clean and modern and up-to-date it was, delightfully quiet. So I really did give two thumbs up for that. Enjoyed the flight out very much indeed. Good job.
Good job,
Virgin.
Yeah, good job, Virgin. We love it.
Well, good. I'm glad you had a great flight. And let's see.
Well, I think we should compare and contrast with Liz's trip. How was your flight down?
Well, mine was not on a large, wide-bodied aircraft. It was on a CRJ-900. But I was happy to get on that plane because it was snowing up north, and I was headed south. So it was
pretty. Did they de-ice?
They did de-ice.
Good for them.
Well done.
And We followed the only 380 that comes into Toronto up to takeoff. So we had a bit of a wait there while we waited for their wake to clear. And away we came. And it was so interesting. We were coming into Charlotte. The weather was quite clear. And we came over this lake. And I looked out the window and thought, what if that's Duffy's Lake? So, of course, I had to take a picture. And indeed it was. It was Lake Wylie.
Is it actually you own the lake?
I own this lake, yes.
Oh, brilliant. Wow.
I do not own this lake. I know.
Why is it not like Stephanie?
Well, what if she's a modest girl? I just like the name Wylie. Mm-hmm. It sounds... Oh, okay. Rustic and very classy.
Yeah, it does.
Very Acme.
Yeah. I love it.
Anyway, thank you guys for picking me up at the airport. It was lovely.
Sure.
See you
so
then.
Nice. You know, we meet every week together. You know, we're such good friends. And, but it's very, very special, I think, that when we get a chance to meet in person with each other and actually, you know, touch each other. Now that I've done that, I'm thinking maybe not so much. No.
Mind those big muscles.
Oh, yeah. Like hard muscles.
Let me just say. To
yeah. So, Nick Camacho, you flew in as well yesterday.
I did. Yeah. And I was going to say, you know, Captain Nick's wonderful A350 flight could only be overshadowed by my wonderful CRJ200 flight from Wichita, Chicago. Those Canadians really know how to build an airplane. man, I keep thinking that those things are going to
You flew a CRJ-200 from Chicago to Charlotte?
No,
Wichita to Chicago, because they don't fly. Yeah.
And then I got the big bad A319 from Chicago.
Ooh, great. So, yeah, the big boy.
I keep thinking, I've been thinking for like 5 years, those CRJ-200s have got to be like cycling out
they're
the
gonna
back
live
of the flight.
They're going to live forever with SkyWest.
They're going to
Air Wisconsin. And I'm trying to think who else operates them in the U.S. still. Mesa, maybe. Does Mesa? I'm not sure.
I don't know.
But definitely SkyWest.
I fly a lot of SkyWest.
Yeah.
J200s, unfortunately.
So what was the meal like?
Did you get pretzels?
They offer you a tiny bag of pretzels.
Stroopwafel?
Nope. Those are yes. They
bummer.
Those to a tiny bag of pretzels or a quinoa bar, which is really like a chocolate quinoa bar is what they call it. But it's like the size of a quarter and it's... Quinoa.
It's like
brown
quinoa. It's like a chocolate crispy thing. Like
not,
a little wafer.
It's not great. It's not very good.
Not filling.
Or a fruit bar, which is.
But you were in Chicago, so I'm sure you got a hot dog. And
because I was trying to get some stuff done for work, I told them that I had a 1 hour layover. And so I had a meeting scheduled from 10 minutes after I landed.
What?
When our flight took off, and I had to tell him as I was boarding, I was like, all right, I'm getting on the airplane and I don't want to be that guy that's like talking real loud on my phone in the airplane. Mm-hmm. And they were like, oh, one more thing a couple of times. And so I did end up being that guy that was talking on my phone, but just briefly. I was able to cut it off, but not quite soon enough. So
I love it.
Yeah.
That just shows you the depths of dedication that.
That's not what my wife calls it.
Well. I mean,
to APG.
Yeah. I thought you were talking about
continue to do your work and everything else while you're traveling over here to Charlotte for the big meetup. Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much for doing all your what was that thing again you do during the week?
Work. Yeah.
Work. Yeah, that's right. Or work. Job or something. Work. It was a J word.
Yep.
Yeah.
Who's
so
the last one to fly in?
Well, we have this gentleman over here next to me, which you don't normally get to see. You hear him every episode, Radio Roger. He does our intros.
So I flew in from Newark on, I think it was the 737-800. I had a window seat, and I'm happy to say that by the time we landed, the window was still there.
Bonus. Did you pay extra for that?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's great to be here. I mean, normally I would sit at my desk and my computer and record these and then upload them to you in a little note or something. And it's nice to be more connected.
I love this because I'm thinking, let's do this every episode.
We'll be back, Steph.
I can't afford to do
going to say, Roger just has to follow Jeff around.
Yeah, I was going to say, it didn't feel like that's what Jeff was thinking as he was trying to get the show set up.
Yeah, but, well, I get a little stressed with all the If you could, you could see if you're looking at the big view of the table and the cables and all the equipment. But
the problem is there's no way for any of the rest of us to really be helpful with this because we don't do the hardware side of the show.
Mm.
So we just stand around.
We just stand around and watch and have conversation while Jeff is.
I am very, very thankful that and at first it was just Nick and I, Captain Nick and I, here while Liz and Nick Camacho were out there and Radio Roger out there doing some shopping while I was setting this stuff up, and Nick was perfect. He just sat there and just let me do my thing because he has been around me long enough to know I'm not going to try to do anything because it's going to just stress Jeff out.
Yeah. you say the caveat, if there's anything I can do to help, no. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll just sit here.
No. Yeah. Perfect. But it's definitely everything is worth it. I enjoy doing this. I hope that I'm not quite too much of a jerk when I'm setting all this stuff up. But hey, soon we're going to be finished with all this and I'm going to be drinking even more of these things and we're going to have a great time. We're going to eat some great steak and great salad and all kinds of stuff. So
I think Captain Nick did a cover art for last week. Do you want to talk about that now?
Well, yeah, we have one more thing.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
You're going to go ahead, Nick.
I was going to have you talk about it. The website.
Oh yeah. I want to do that. But before I do that, I'm going to talk about the fact that we got a chance to meet with Armando and Megan.
Oh yes,
today we drove up to Lake Norman and Davidson, I think is the name of the city, and we had a wonderful what was it called, the North Harbor or something or other restaurant or whatever.
It was a yacht club.
North Harbor Yacht Club.
Yeah, and it was really, really well. You know, the food was great, but it was just, and the setting was beautiful. But just seeing Armando and Megan
Oh, nothing. Sorry.
Yeah, and all of us together, including Radio Roger. I picked up Radio Roger on the way, and we headed up there and had a great lunch. So I just wanted to mention that. So it was great seeing Armando. His schedule changed. He was hoping to – we might actually see him, I think he said, tomorrow afternoon. And then earlier we were thinking that maybe we would get to see him on Sunday and maybe even go fly in his biplane and stuff, but his schedule ended up – yeah, well, I didn't mention that. I don't know if he does that kind of thing or not.
He doesn't quite have a biplane, although Captain Nick might be able to lay across his top wing. We could just like hook his toes to one wingtip.
I thought he does have, doesn't he have a biplane now?
He doesn't have a steer. I'm sorry. He doesn't have
a steer. It's not a steer.
Oh, not a steer.
He has a biplane, but it's a little small.
Oh, so you're saying if it's not a steerman, it's not a biplane. I see.
No,
all the hate mail goes to Nick Camacho.
Yep, that was a slip. I meant to say it's a smaller.
Yeah, it is a smaller. It's not. Yeah. Steermans are huge. All right. Yeah. So, yes, you are correct, Camacho. It's time for us to talk about cover art. The website, I mean.
Something visual.
Something like that. So I need to thank a very, very special thanks to Erwin Goslowski. I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly, sir, in Germany. And he's an IT, and he, you know, I mentioned several episodes ago, you know, this thing about the secure socket layer, you know, HTTPS. And if you go to our website, sometimes you'll be scared away because it says, oh, this is not secure, you know, go back to safety and all that kind of stuff. So I thought, okay, we need to do something about this. So I said, is there anybody out there that can help me with this? And so Erwin reached out to me and said, are you looking for somebody to help you with that still? And I said, yes. And so he said, okay, I'm willing to help for sure. And then I mentioned to him, and then he saw where the website was hosted and how much we were paying for this website. And he said, you know, I think that we can find a better solution for that and maybe, you know, save you some money. And I said, well, you know, there's this guy that reached out to me many, many years ago. I think even back in my Catholic pilot days, who also is a podcaster or was a podcaster back in the day in New Zealand and Auckland area, and who is in IT and has a web server and all that kind of stuff. And he offered to host the site, and his name is Dan Faulkner. And so I mentioned to Erwin, I said, yeah, this guy, many years, and several times, actually, thank you, Dan. He was very persistent. Every couple of years, he said, you know, Jeff, I'm just kind of, you know, reiterating my offer to host your site for free. And so I mentioned that to Erwin. He goes, yeah, we should get Dan, you know, on the team here, and let's see what we can do here. So the two of them got together and did a huge amount of work behind the scenes to transfer the WordPress install on the platform over to this new platform. The server's in Fremont, California, I believe. It's a brand new WordPress install. It looks the same because it's all the same website build and all that kind of stuff. And it was, but I just wanted to say thank you so much, because it's a, I know it's a lot of work, and I really didn't want to have anything to do with it anymore. You know, I used to be into all this technology, and over the years I've just forgotten about how to do all that coding and everything else, and they took care of everything. And so Erwin, thanks, man. You worked so hard to do all the work you did, and he won't let me reimburse him in any way. And so the only thing I can do is say thank you for all the work that you've done. We really do appreciate it. So thank you. And Dan, for all you do as far as getting the server, the platform, and everything else, and saving us, you know, it's coffee fund money. And so we don't have to divert coffee fund money to pay for website hosting. We can spend it on
more beer.
Meetups.
So, and meetups. Yeah, that's what I meant to say. And equipment and all the other things that are expenses for us here on the site, so, or on the show. So
Captain Nick's cover art.
Yes, let's go to some cover art, Captain Nick.
Yeah, absolutely. Then the subject for the show title and the cover art for last week was suggested by Alan Murray, and he gave us the story that the 747 that was flown by Captain Moody. So I didn't steal Captain Moody's exact quote, because I thought that would be just stealing his thunder a little bit, because he said that landing after that ash cloud encounter he went through, the very first really, and the one that brought the whole danger of ash cloud into the eye of us all. He said, trying to visually find the runway.
Negotiating.
The end of it was, no, it was...
No, I think he actually negotiating
up a badger's ass. Something. Yeah, it was pretty much that. But so I just made it a little bit different for the show title. So we had navigating the badger's ass. And of course, we also did a story about a 737 that landed and managed to run off the end of the runway. So I thought that would be an appropriate airplane to be flying up a badger's ass. And here we've got a 737 approaching from the rear. And in front of him is ginormous.
In so many ways.
Badger with its tail in the air, inviting
his where's rival. The logo?
Sorry?
And where's the logo?
The logo. Now, you'll have to squint at the actual target on the badger to find the logo. Expand the picture up and have a look.
Yeah,
there.
We can.
And of course, it was show 612.
Where's the number? I'm having trouble figuring out where that number is landing on runway 12.
So he's landing on runway 12. And if you look to the left, you'll see that actually there's a six on the tarmac there. So that's runway 612. And that was about it, really. It was an interesting trying to find
there was a request to add the volcano to the background, and I didn't know if that had anything to do with the fact that was...
Right. Now, that was Jeff's suggestion. So he looked at it in the first draft and said, oh, this looks great, but why don't we put a volcano in the back? So I went, oh, God, I'll just magic a volcano.
Well, you're so good at these things, Nick. It's so easy for you. But the whole thing about... Captain Moody, was that right?
Yes.
Was flying his 747 into that ash cloud.
Absolutely.
And that's how he was negotiating the Badger's ass.
Yeah, indeed. And I'll tell you what, Alan Murray, who had...
Arse, sorry.
Had...
Oops.
Had, sending that feedback, sent us some more, which only arrived, I think, today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know if you want to read this, Jeff, or would you...
No, you read it, Nick.
Okay, well, Alan wrote, hi, Captains Jeff and Nick, and many thanks for featuring Captain Moody. The item was spot on, a combination of drama, humour, and total respect. It's just as he would have wanted. It's a sobering thought, too, as you quite rightly pointed out, that some listeners would never have heard of him. And yet, to many of us, it seems like yesterday. I'm definitely getting older. Best wishes and keep up the excellent shows. What a nice thing to say. And that was from Alan. Thank you very much indeed. Much appreciated.
Yeah, thank you for, you know, sending that to us initially, and which led to us covering the news about Captain Moody and his passing and, you know, reliving this whole event. And the fact that we were able to do some amazing cover art.
Yeah,
Captain Nick was.
Enjoyed that. Yeah. Cheers.
All right. Very good. So, have you heard any good jokes lately,
Captain Nick? Oh, yeah. And that's a good point. I don't know.
Maybe a lot of us are on Facebook and we see like really just hilarious stuff.
Well, I did hear one. And since we've had a bit of news about breaking rules, I thought that, and I have a bit of a reputation, or at least I certainly did when I was in the Air Force, for being a bit of a rule breaker. And I have to agree with this, because it says the rules are a good place to hide if you don't have a better idea and the talent to execute it. If you deviate from a rule, it must be a flawless performance. For example, if you fly under a bridge, don't hit the damn bridge.
Oh, good advice.
And there was another one in here which I quite liked, which said, and I have to agree with this, I've flown in both pilot seats. Can someone tell me why the other one is always occupied by an idiot?
An age-old question.
Yeah, I've experienced the same thing.
Well, I have one here. I was going to read this one. The aircraft limits are only there in case there is another flight by that particular aircraft. If subsequent flights do not appear likely, there are no limits.
Very good. Camacho, do you have any good jokes from aviation related or sayings? Just pick one. Because that's what I'm going to do.
Death is just nature's way of telling you to watch your airspeed. So I saw that one and I immediately thought of, that same saying, only nature's way of telling you to keep the stick back. Because, man, when I was learning to fly a tail dragger, I feel like that is all I ever heard was instructors saying, stick back, stick back, keep the stick back. And I think my brother, who soloed in a tail dragger, I think his shirt may have said that on the back of it when he soloed. But man, that's something you always hear.
All right. So I'm sitting next to the old pilot. And I've heard that an old pilot is one who can remember when flying was dangerous and sex was safe.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I'm sure you remember those days.
And you have to make up your mind about growing up and becoming a pilot. You can't do both.
Ah, oh, very good. Mm. Very good.
Good stuff. Anything else?
They're all good ones. We'll have a list in the show.
Yeah, we'll have this in the
show. Some shout outs. Funny and wise sayings regarding flying.
I did not do coffee fund. Okay, so we want to skip that? Oh, you mean did I prepare to do the coffee fund? No, I did not.
Okay.
But I'm sure that we've had some people make some wonderful donations to the coffee fund.
Okay.
much.
And we'll catch up on the next episode. Definitely. And acknowledge your wonderful contributions.
I think you should say that one.
Which one?
That one.
As a pilot, only two bad things can happen to you, and one of them will. One day you will walk out to the aircraft knowing it's your last flight. Two, one day you will walk out to the aircraft not knowing it is your last flight. And that,
I don't even look at that as a joke. That's just
that is not actually a joke. That is actually so true, because honestly, when I was when I performed the last flight for Delta Airlines, I didn't realize at the time that that was my last flight.
I think that's common.
Same with you.
Yeah.
Same with me.
Yeah, I think it is.
I think one of our former fighter pilots needs to read one of these.
Really?
About. Well, we got two here.
Oh, how are we going to achieve this?
Well, maybe perhaps you could read it, Nick, and the other fighter pilot can either agree or disagree.
Uh-oh. Is a fighter pilot in our audience, live audience.
Hello.
Hi.
Right, let me find the fighter pilot one. Okay, here we go. Fighter pilots are steely-eyed weapon systems managers who kill bad people and break things. However, they can also be very charming and personable. The average fighter pilot, despite sometimes having a swaggering exterior, is very much capable of such feelings as love, affection, intimacy and caring. However, these feelings usually don't involve anyone else.
I know that guy. He's sitting right there.
Good one.
Excellent.
Oh, man. All right, so we've done
a couple of feedbacks now.
Yeah, let's do at least one or two pieces of feedback and then just wrap this thing up.
Yeah.
Captain, incoming message.
All right, feedback from El Spiloto. And he starts off with a rant. Americans just like doing it the hard way. That's what she said. All right. Hello, Jeff and APG crew. Brace yourselves for another El Spiloto rant. Turning back to APG 610 and the incident of United 2477 slipping off the runway in Houston. But this may have also slipped under the APG radar. Excuse the pun. But did you notice that on three of the readbacks of go-around instructions, the sound of the autopilot being disconnected can be heard in the background? Curious. Looking at flight radar, I checked the lowest altitudes above aerodrome level these aircraft reached before climbing away, and they were as follows. United 1383, it's a 737-900, 825 feet. A SkyWest 5276, a CRJ-200, 925 feet. And a United 1201, a 737-700, 2,000 feet. After collecting this information, there's now brain matter all over my living room where I sit. What was the rush to go around, especially from 2,000 feet? All aircraft were in cloud upon receiving the go-around call. The METAR was ceiling broken 800 feet AAL. But unless they were in conflict with another aircraft and TCAS would have highlighted this, there's no rush to fly the go-around when more than 200 feet above the threshold. Additionally, as Captain Nick mentioned, in the U.S., go-around instructions seem to be closely guarded government secrets to which no pilot shall know of until moments before disaster. Yeah, that we'd like to keep it real and surprising.
Yeah, give you a surprise,
When those instructions do come, it tends to be a brutal 2,000 feet or less level off and is so late, pilots would need to roll inverted and pull hard to avoid the altitude bust. So, and this is El Spiloto right here. And this is, I'm going to do my best to read what he has written. Why do pilots make their lives harder by disconnecting the autopilot and even worse, start a go around immediately before they've had a chance to change gear from a saunter down the ILS to pulling up their best attempt at a Saturn V rocket launch reenactment? United 1383 pilots were clearly struggling. They were the ones right behind the guy that went off the end of the runway, the flight that went off the end of the runway. They were clearly struggling with the workload imposed by the go-around, as one of the pilots told the controller to stand by after getting a heading to fly after a clearance to climb to 2,000 feet. The pressure did not let up later when the controller had having to add urgency to the execution of the turn to the north in his follow-on transmission. Bar the risk of impending bent metal, I have been taught to read back the go-around instructions, adjust the autopilot speed, altitude, and heading as required, cross-check with the other guy, and then give a quick brief of any out-of-the-ordinary go-around items, such as flaps that have not been set to landing configuration, thus flap movement is not required at the start of the go-around. Not sure about the CRJ, but I know the 737 can fly a go-around with the autopilot engaged as long as both autopilots are engaged. That's a big point, I think.
I never flew two autopilots. We hand flew our Cat 1, Cat 2s and 3s, but if we hit Toga, it disconnected the autopilot.
Okay. So in most cases, in a Category 1, so likely in this kind of scenario, the autopilot would have been, if you initiated a go-around, it would have been a manual go-around.
Yes.
That's my understanding of it, too. Okay. Even in the normal procedures of my old 737-300 manual, 300, comma, manual go-arounds are assumed to be flown using the autopilot. Huh?
You can flip one once after you got started. But...
No, I think I misread his sentence.
Yeah.
Even in the normal procedures of my old 737-300 manual, comma, go-arounds are assumed to be flown using the, see how it's important, you know, the proper, punctuation, are assumed to be flown using the autopilot. I quote, confirm rotation to go around attitude and monitor autopilot. Again, I did not fly the 737. My understanding, which is obviously different than El Spalato's experience with the 737, is that most of the time, unless you're flying a low visibility Category 2, Category 3 approach on the 737, if you initiate a go around, the autopilot will be turned off and you will be flying a manual go around. Okay. Because we've talked about several instances of airplanes crashing doing the manual go around procedure. One in Russia that I can think of right offhand, and I think there were a couple of others that we've talked about.
The only airplanes I'm familiar with that don't disconnect the auto throttles is the Maxes don't, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
And the larger the wide bodies, some of them don't. But the 7576 did. I think the 80 did too. Mad Dog?
Do what?
When you hit Toga, it disconnects.
No, you could fly an automatic go around on those. At least the model that I flew.
Well,
we need to get this man a microphone.
Oh, shocking. The other thing you have issues with when you get told to go around is the only way to disconnect the ILS is either to reach up and turn both flight directors off or disconnect the autopilot. Because it's locked in on a localizer in the glide slope at that point. And the only way to do that is we would have to reach up and just turn off both flight directors or disconnect the autopilot. That was the only way to get it out of the ILS mode.
So we have some, I guess maybe it depends on the way the airplane is configured for a particular airline, I guess.
Because I know an American, the 73s do Cat 2s and 3s manually through the HUD. Now United and Delta, I know, can do auto lands. I'm assuming Southwest can too. American didn't do it.
Right. So there are differences between airlines and configurations from the manufacturer.
I don't know what the bus does.
So regardless.
Not that I care. Oh.
Let's just assume that, you know, El Spalato's.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry. So you don't change that camera setting, Jeff.
Too late.
You did something
too late.
I can't turn the camera around to show Colonel Jeff and in our audience.
Nick was just advertising how many friends he had before the dog died.
Okay, so you're saying I should turn off that camera? No, I won't do that again. By the way, thank you or sorry to everybody in the chat room. Turns out that extra camera, the wide angle view, if I just use that only, and I turn off the main camera, which is the one where we're seeing Captain Nick, it turns off the audio completely. So there was a period of time that no one was hearing our audio on the video. Sorry about that. Yeah, we're still, you know, trying to figure all this stuff out.
Part of the show fondly,
buddy. Yeah, they'll go, oh, this is nice. We don't have to hear what they're saying.
Right, yeah, we don't have to listen to them.
Thank you. So let's continue with El Spalato's, let's just assume that his point there that, you know, you can do a automatic go around connected to a 737 autopilot. It may be true. It may not be. Depends on the configuration. By knocking out the autopilot, the pilot flying not only increases his or her workload, but now has dumped a pile of work on the pilot monitoring, who now has more to watch given the job of adjusting the speed, heading, and altitude bugs, and handle communication and configuration changes and checklists at the minimum. Taking time to start the go-around has the added benefits of reducing time pressure, increasing time and altitude to what is most likely an unexpectedly low level off, ultimately reducing the chances of a cock-up. Captain Nick, good news. Soft go-around is now available on at least the A380 and the A350. This works by throwing the thrust levers forward into the toga detent as usual, then immediately followed by a click back into flex/MCT, a maximum continuous thrust, I believe, or a maximum incline thrust.
Yep. Maximum continuous.
Continuous, okay. Manual go-around soft software mode engages, and the aircraft will limit climb to 2,000 feet per minute by thrust adjustment, which is very similar to what Miami Rick always tells us about on the more advanced Boeing or more the newer generations of Boeings.
One click
where you go, 7576 gives you 2,000 feet per minute.
If you double click, it gives you max thrust.
Okay, double click gives you the full max thrust. Okay. On my tower visit to JFK, it was explained to me that most U.S. class Bravo airports, letters of agreements are made between towers and TRACONs. These set out the go-around expectations for each runway and handoff expectations, yet they don't feel the need to clue pilots in, and they did wonder why altitude busts off go-around kept happening. I advised them, if time, first give the go-around altitude, then the go-around instruction. The heading can come later, as all aircraft are initially going to continue till the overhead, the threshold at least. It's also in our interest as pilots to do as much as possible to protect ourselves and the aircraft from such last-second letter of agreement restrictions. Rushing into a go-around without using the autopilot runs completely contrary to this effort. This concludes my latest rant. May the blue and the brown bits fill the right parts of your windshields and the winds come from where most optimal. El Spalato. Now, I will say, thank you very much, El Spalato, for your feedback. And I agree with much of what you've said here. And I don't know if it's a difference between, number one, the kind of aircraft you're flying, and number two, maybe your generation of flying experience. Both Captain Colonel, the good-looking Captain Jeff over here, Colonel Jeff, in our audience, and I are from, I would say, old school. We learned to fly mostly manual flying. And I don't know about you, Jeff, but for me, when I get into a situation where it's not what I'm expecting and I have to use automation to do whatever I need to do. It used to be, because I'm not doing it anymore. The most comfortable thing for me is to turn all the damn stuff off, you know, click, 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 and just fly the airplane because I know how to make it go up and down with the yoke or the stick. I know how to, you know, use the throttles for speed control. And I can do it all nice and smoothly too, because a lot of times, I don't know about your experience, Jeff, but in mine, if you do an automated go around, this thing is going to go to full power unless you have one of the systems where we just talked about where you can immediately go back off and use a lower power setting and everything else. I don't want to hear screaming passengers behind me through the cockpit door. I want everybody to feel like they were safe and sound and not really notice that we have initiated a go around sequence, especially in the situation that we had in this, where it wasn't an urgent thing. It wasn't like you're right at minimums, 200 feet or lower. And, you know, you, in that case, you really need to get the airplane getting away from the ground and such. This is, you know, it wasn't that situation here.
Having never flown an airplane with an automated, having never flown a jet with an automated go around, that's the only way I know how to do it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when I go around now, it's a very controlled event. Nine times out of 10, I don't need max power. I just advance enough to get me a nice positive rate so I can get the gear up and start to configure. It's like, right. Oh, okay, we're going to go around. Okay, let me wind the clock here. Okay, bring the flaps up. The gear's up already. Okay, we're going to, oh, you want to turn to this heading. Okay, do that. It's not a rush. It's not a race to do everything.
And frankly, I know that you can do all of this with the automation if you're really good at doing all these things very, very quickly with the automation. But me speaking personally, it's just so much easier just to turn it off, not mess with all the automation.
And that's what I do. If the automation isn't doing what I want,
right,
or it's giving me a distraction. I mean, even if it's VNAV, I just turn it off.
Now, I think that maybe the newer generation of pilots who grew up in this world of automation and advanced avionics and everything else, that's probably going to be the more comfortable way.
That's
for
all
them
they know. They don't even know what a round dial is. I'm seeing young co-pilots I'm flying with now in part 135 who all they know is Garmin. That's right. All they know.
Yeah.
You know, automation. And they want to turn it all on, and I'm yelling at them, turn that crap off.
Yeah.
You need to
fly. I kept telling him how many times, and I know this is not exactly the situation that El Spalato is speaking of. And I do agree with, by the way, his point that and I do agree with Captain Nick complaining about here in the U.S. our go around procedures, our missed approach procedures, and everything else are, you know, we all know that they're not going to. You're not going to probably actually fly this missed approach procedure, but it was my understanding they put those things there in case you've lost radio communications and you have some kind of a plan to take the airplane to a certain place, a certain altitude, and if they can't communicate with you, they know what you're going to be doing. But they don't really expect you to actually, in a real situation, do these things. They're going to tell you what they want you to do. But his point of if it's going to be a very low level off, and I know Captain Nick has talked about this several times on our show, if it's going to be a quick level off, start with that. That's a good idea, I think. You know, like climb, maintain 2,000. And execute the missed approach instructions or fly this heading.
One of the other things that comes into play here is what do we do in the sim? It's that reflex of, oh, I'm back in the sim. It's a go around.
Yeah.
You know, no matter where you are in the approach, you hear go around and you're in that's all of a sudden, because we don't do it in the airplane that often, but you do it in the sim all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a triggered reaction almost for a lot of guys to just go, oh, toga. Positive rate, gear up, flaps 15, you know, set the other, and it's like boom, boom, boom.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's part of the issue.
Yeah.
But
Captain Nick, I know that you have something to say about this.
No, I agree with much of what you have said. I think you've got to tutor your actions to the aircraft you're flying. If you're flying an aircraft that is a more manually orientated one, then I think you need to be prepared to take out the automatics and fly a manual go around. But El Spalato makes a very good point. As soon as you take the automatics out, you're now putting a much greater workload on the pilot monitoring. And he is finding it very hard now to monitor your actions because you've doubled his workload. Instead of just reaching up, pushing the throttles forward, reaching up, selecting a height, heading, and speed, he is now having to do that all that for you. And he's trying to clean up the airplane and he's working the radio. So his workload now is, you know, enormous compared with what it should be if you use the automatics to fly a controlled go around. And I see absolutely, in fact, if the aircraft is designed to get go around using the automatics, you'd be foolish to take them out and increase people's workload in this situation. So I think it's horses for courses. If you're flying an older style airplane, then perhaps an older style technique is suitable, but not for the latest generation of aircraft.
Well, I think you make a good point there because I have never I mean, I've always been behind a generation, at least, on the aircraft that I've flown in my career. So they've always, you know, the most modern airplane I've flown is the Boeing 717, which is a Mad Dog MD-95. Old, very old technology. Some modern avionics, yes, but it was designed in a different era. And the modern aircraft that most people are flying today, yeah, I agree with you. That's the way they were designed to fly. But I guess my only point is, if you are flying one of these modern airplanes, know how to use the automation to not just do the, we're about to hit the ground, oh crap, let's, you know, throw everybody back in the back of their seats and people think we're dying because we're rocketing up into the sky. If it's not necessary, just know how to do that. And that's part of being proficient. You know, being proficient is being able to hand fly an airplane and being able to use the auto flight system as well or better than you can hand fly the airplane.
Indeed. I mean, even while I was still flying, there were three different types of Airbus go-arounds on our aircraft. You know, you did one style of go-around from down at decision height. If you were higher than that, so and above the acceleration altitude, you did a different style. And there was a low-level one, an intermediate one, and one where you hadn't really committed to the approach. So each one had a completely different technique, and each one you had to learn how to use the aircraft automatics to achieve what you wanted. So the only one that really required you to do an abrupt go around with a steep rate of climb and full power was one where you were down at decision height with only 200 feet separating you from the ground, and you needed to get, you know, 200 or 300 tons of airplane going up in short order. Otherwise, you were going to bottom out and possibly touch on the runway, which you definitely didn't want to do in case you were no longer lined up, like this poor chap who, you know, nearly hit the control tower. Yeah.
Well, I think we can all agree that you could always go around.
You can always go around, Steph. Thank you. There it is. And Tim Van Ram, you're welcome. All right. And also, I'd like to kind of end this whole thing by telling Els Pilato, who, by the way, is one of the top tier contributors to our coffee fund, and we really do appreciate that, sir. I want to say, good thing is, more and more of the airplanes that are out there flying are newer generation airplanes, and more and more of the pilots now flying are new generation pilots as well, because of a lot of us old codgers who, you know, want to just turn off the autopilot Yeehaw! And manually fly the airplane are fewer and far between. So there we go. That's what I wanted to say. So yeah, there we go. Thank you again for your feedback. It's going to be a short show here, relatively speaking. We're going to go ahead and end it. We're going to wrap it up by telling you, you know, we mentioned earlier that the website, now it's really secure. You can be safe and sound and not worry about people stealing your data, even though we never collected any. So head over to the airlinepilotguy.com and check it out. We have information about the crew. By the way, I think we all need to update our bios. I was looking at mine. I'm thinking, oh, yeah, that's way out of date. So we'll try to do that and fix that. Information about the community, which is the most important thing about all of this. Not us on the crew. It's you, people listening and contributing to our show. So that's their information about that. We have the coffee fund information. We have merchandise. We have the library. Tiffany, thank you so much for managing that. And we have more information about the old pilots' plane tales. He puts added information regarding each of those wonderful episodes of plane tales. And what else do we have, Liz? We have merchandise. Mentioned that. Okay. Wow. And we're also on social media. And Dr. Steph is going to tell us all about that.
Sure.
Super delay.
Yeah. Super delay. So I don't. Okay. Facebook.
Don't look at the screen.
Except I don't know which one she's got pulled up.
It doesn't
matter.
Just say that.
Facebook.com/airlinepilotguy. We're on X, which were at APG Crew. Also, Instagram for Captain Nick's show artwork. We're APG Crew. You can find us on YouTube, youtube.com/airlinepilotguy, I think, maybe. Something like that. You could just search Airline Pilot Guy, too. Like that. That'll work.
Right.
And,
I'm pretty sure it's something like
that. But the real deal, we all know, is Slack.
Oh, yeah, Slack. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. And, well, you know, we're in well, let's see if Hillel is here and Steph's. Wait a minute. I hear some water. Okay. Hillel, can you tell us about Slack?
Okay, but I'm dripping wet.
That's okay. Do you mind him coming in here dripping wet on your
floor? You can use this mic over here.
Okay. All right. So thank you, Steph. Hillel, tell us about Slack.
APG listeners, please join us on our Slack team. Slack is a communication, coordination, and sharing platform that works on your mobile, laptop, or browser. On Slack, we share news and ideas. We suggest episode and plain tales topics. We plan events and meetups. To get into the Slack team, please email me at slack@airlinepilotguy.com. That's S-L-A-C-K, Sierra Lima Alpha Charlie Kilo @airlinepilotguy.com. Or send me a tweet with your preferred email address to @Hillel, and I'll send you an invitation. That's Hillel, spelled Hotel India 11 Echo 1, and see you in Slack.
Thanks, Hillel.
Jeff?
What?
Do you still have some of that good shampoo from the last place?
No,
I have pretty good shampoo. You can use it.
He can't hear you.
Oh,
you have to yell.
You gotta
holler. Oh, yeah, it's good shampoo. You'll be fine. Go ahead and use it.
Okay. All right, and I want to say a special thanks to our good friend.
Oh, my
our
pleasure
radio,
to be
official
here.
Radio, like a real radio announcer, Roger, for taking his personal time to come down and join us.
Journey of pleasure.
Oh, yeah. So that's great. I mean, it's wonderful to have you part of our team. And thanks to our live audience, Colonel Jeff. Thank you for showing up here. Also, a longtime supporter and listener of the, in fact, as you know, I mean, he started listening to Catholic Pilot Episode 1, which is basically the very beginning, the genesis of me dabbling in aviation podcasting. And he's shaking his head thinking, I really know what I was thinking. Thanks to all of you who took the time, especially those of you who have these job things, to come here, Captain Camacho.
Nope.
Yeah? What?
Not a captain.
Well, in our hearts, you're a captain. And Liz coming down from Toronto, and Nick flying all the way over the pond from jolly good
did
old
you say
England.
This was your first time back to the airport?
Yeah.
Since you retired?
Yeah, since I retired, yeah.
That is crazy.
Without dropping off people.
Like to get on an airplane.
Yeah. To actually commit aviation properly.
Right. Oh.
In a real airplane.
Yeah.
It was 5 years ago.
Yeah, 5 years ago, 2019.
Tim Van Ram says, get those coals going for the steaks. Pour yourself a good California Cabernet to accompany the meal.
We have all those things. Oh, yeah, Tim didn't say that at all. That was just this lady right here that we see on the screen, Liz. Yeah. All right. Well,
we have the video proof that we have the
yeah,
the actual commentary group.
Oh, look at that. Wow. Man, you can't get enough of Liz. And so what else to say? Oh, and thank you so much to our lovely host.
Thank you all for being here. My pleasure.
Beautiful, huh?
Yeah.
And with that, we're going to hopefully some of you out there listening live or in the area, and you'll be able to join. I know there are a couple of people that are listening live right now who are in the area, and they're going to join us tomorrow at the meetup. And I'm hoping that you will, too. And we'll have coverage of the meetup on the next episode. And with that, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up and say, wishing you all clear skies and limited visibility and tailwinds. Take care and God bless.
Cheers, y'all.
When you go flying, make sure your bladder is empty and your tanks are full. Cheers, everybody.
See you next time.
Bye, everybody.
Bye from New York City.
Yeah, he's up in the sky. It's the airline pilot guy.
good, eh?
Such a good pilot till I started APG. I opened doors for little old ladies, I helped them to their seats. Airline, not a guy, I fly America. Oh, airline, not a guy, he can't land in heavy fall. Oh, I got no friends cause I'm always flying, I just don't have the time. But I can land this old plane, I can land it just fine. Airline pilot guy,